This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, it is Lee Chwee Lin alongside Kelvin Yee and Ayman Rashad. Coming up, we're looking at intellectual property rights in Southeast Asia.
And as always, you can always join a conversation. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming up on the Evening Edition.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming along to 7:06 in the evening. You're with Lin, Ayman and Kelvin. And as promised, our next story is going to continue our kind of business focus here on the show tonight, because we are continuing to look at what affects business environments, not just here in the country, but actually in our region. So specifically, a look at intellectual property rights in Southeast Asia. This is coming after a report was released by Geneva Network and several think tanks in the region, and it highlighted the importance of protecting IP rights to the countries here.
Yeah, so having a strong framework to protect IP rights can actually help Southeast Asian countries move towards more high-tech, knowledge-based goods and services. And of course, this can help boost economic development, because by having a strong IP framework, businesses will be able to monetize their innovations, and it can also attract foreign businesses to invest in the local economy as well.
But sadly, not all countries have a solid framework. For example, in Malaysia, we still see a lot of counterfeit products and internet piracy, and our patent system is still weak compared to Singapore, which is the highest performing country globally, according to this study. So these issues can create challenges when it comes to promoting innovation or attracting foreign direct investments.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you went there directly, Kelvin, because of course, I think piracy is the number one thing that you would think of when it comes to property rights, intellectual property rights here in the country. It's immediate, right?
When I said that, I thought about Chinatown immediately.
Yeah, exactly, which also has bags. So it's not just the films and the TV shows. But it's also, I mean, if you think about it, it used to be that you're replicating something that was in cinemas, or you're replicating something that was a DVD somewhere else. But instead, what's happening now is we're actually seeing piracy of streaming content as well.
Yep.
So I think that speaks to the level of property rights. IP rights protection that we need to have and that we need to keep up with, because it's one thing to have something that works for this exact moment in time, but we're moving so rapidly that this exact moment nowadays just lasts like nothing. You know, someone comes along, disrupts, innovates, and then there you go. Suddenly what you had doesn't necessarily apply as well anymore.
Yeah, and that speed of change, I think, really calls for stronger for example, patent protection. So, I mean, the basic idea behind it is to sort of encourage the players in the industry to continue to innovate and sort of one-up each other. But if you don't have a strong patent framework to obtain a patent, people can just do the same thing over and over again, and there's no new changes, no developments in the goods and services that you're producing.
Well, having said that, though, I think there is a need to make sure that our framework at least is one that is quite specific and one that can keep up with the times. The risk is that now that the IP itself has, originally began to support businesses, right, to make sure that, you know, we spur innovation. But now that it's become an industry of its own, you sometimes see cases where IP lawyers get paid more than the ones than the artists or the writers that created the product themselves at the start, right? And that also, of course, there are problems related to medicine and the prices of it, and the companies that have monopolies over certain kinds of medication that has cost a lot to developing countries such as us. So, you know, yes, we do need some sort of IP framework, but we need to be quite precise with it.
Yeah. And also looking at doing the research, I think, before we did this show, before we called up our guest, actually, who we're going to speak to shortly, Philip Stevens, who's the executive director of Geneva Network, you find that there's a lot of studies and information that have come out of the EU. And I think that's interesting, because we're talking about Southeast Asia, which, of course, has a bloc within it. We have ASEAN. It's it's not the same kind, of course, as EU, but it's interesting that we're able to learn, I think, from the very specific things that they've gone through of trying to react to having this cluster of countries gathered together, both geographically and economically, of having businesses investing in the EU in the same way that they're looking to invest here in Southeast Asia. So I think there are very specific lessons that we can take from the EU. And yeah, I'm just kind of excited to get into it. If you have any questions or thoughts on IP protection or IP rights here in Southeast Asia, especially if it's affected you directly, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Next, we're going to be speaking with Philip Stevens, who is the Executive Director of Geneva Network, which, a reminder, was, you know, the people who released the report on intellectual property rights here in Southeast Asia in the first place. So that's coming your way after this. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
It's 7:11 in the evening. You're with Lynn, Ayman, and Kelvin. And we're looking at a report that's been released by Geneva Network, as well as several think tanks within the Southeast Asian region, which is looking at intellectual property rights. I'll say it one more time, and then after this, it's just IP. I can't do this anymore. Looking at IP rights here in our region. And now, to take a closer look, actually, at the contents of it, we have on the line one of the co-authors of the report, Philip Stevens. Philip is the Executive Director of Geneva Network, which is a public policy research and advocacy organization. Philip, thank you so much for joining us this evening. So, could you talk to us about why you think ASEAN countries should be focusing on strengthening their IP frameworks? I suppose, you know, why now is the question.
Well, it's really a question of economic growth and how to make the jump from being an upper middle income country to a high income country. So just to take you back in time a bit, to put it into context, Malaysia 20, 30, 40 years ago was really an economy focused on heavy industry or manufacturing, basic manufacturing, on the export of natural resources and commodities and agriculture. So far, economically, it's certainly done a lot for poverty reduction and has helped lift the country up to the upper middle income status. The question is, where does the next bit of economic growth come from? How does Malaysia make the transition to being a high income country? And lots of countries have struggled with this. It's called the middle income trap. So they find they reach a certain level of economic development at the middle income stage, and then making that final transition to high income status is what lots of countries find very difficult and struggle to do. But certain countries have achieved it, most notably neighbour Singapore, which has gone from being basically an agrarian economy 60, 70 years ago to a high-income country over quite a rapid period of time. It's done that, amongst other things, by basically becoming a knowledge-based economy. So most of Singapore's economic growth and output doesn't come from assembling products, physical, tangible items, oil, gas, agriculture. It comes more from so-called knowledge-based goods and services. So these are businesses and goods and services that are based around ideas, concepts, brands, human creativity, and intellectual property. So that's the path Malaysia needs to travel. To finish its transition to a high-income economy, it needs to become much more knowledge-based. But the key enabler for that to happen is intellectual property rights. So that's a legal protection for ideas, for patents, for trademarks, and for copyrights, which allow the fruits of people's intellectual labours to be protected so they can be sold, licensed, developed, and commercialised in a sensible way.
And why is IP such an important component to making that transition to a more knowledge-based economy?
Well, there's two reasons. Firstly, innovation is now global. And secondly, the manufacturing and creation of goods and services is now a global phenomena as well. And intellectual property underpins both of those two different aspects. So let me explain the first one, innovation. So in the old days, a company would invent, develop, market, and brand and distribute a product just by itself, one company in one country. So if you take a new medicine, for example, in the old days, not that long ago, one big company, Merck or Pfizer, would have done the whole invention and distribution process itself in a vertically integrated model. Nowadays, the big company really sits at the center of a big network of innovation. So, for example, the early stage research might be done by a university or a very small company. And then that university or small company might license its research to the pharmaceutical company. And then the pharmaceutical company would engage other companies to do further research and testing in lots of different countries. Then it might engage other companies to do the manufacturing, the regulatory work. And then it will engage yet more organizations to do the marketing, branding, and distribution. So you have really a very networked model of innovation wherein lots of different companies, organizations are involved in creating new products, and they do it across borders around the world. So the opportunity for a country like Malaysia is to get involved in these innovation networks at various points in the innovation cycle where it has comparative advantage. So in the case of pharmaceuticals, it might be clinical trials, because there's great money to be made in managing clinical trials on behalf of other companies. That's something that Malaysia does quite well. There's big economic benefits to be had there, for example. So Malaysia needs to plug itself in more into these innovation networks. And intellectual property is key there, because within any innovation network, there's a lot of proprietary knowledge being shared between different organizations. And the owners of that knowledge need to be sure that it can be shared safely without any unfair disclosure to competitors or being stolen by the partners themselves, used for their own economic advantage. So a good, solid intellectual property framework allows that to happen. The other reason why intellectual property is important is because of the way manufacturing is done these days. So in the old days, as I said, manufacturing was probably done in one country. And nowadays, you take a product like a smartphone, there's multiple components. So there's hundreds of different companies involved in creating one product, again, all in different countries. Very difficult to share with other companies in different countries unless you're sure of the legal framework and the certainty of rights. So the intellectual property system underpins all this collaboration and cooperation between different companies in different countries. So it's key that these rules exist.
Well, if we were to look at the other side of the argument, there is the dilemma that IPs would restrict the sharing of new knowledge and that it would tend to benefit a select few, perhaps causing even monopolies, especially for developing countries. So what are your thoughts on balancing that out with the benefits you spoke about earlier?
Well, I think it's a mistake to view intellectual property rights as a zero-sum game. They have often been characterized as a form of monopoly. I don't think that's necessarily fair, because the fastest way for technology to spread around the world is through the processes of the market. So a company that has a new piece of technology, for example, will want to sell it to as many places as possible. So the places it's going to go to first are those places that have intellectual property rights that will protect its investments in launching in that market. So actually, the economic data shows that countries that have stronger intellectual property rights tend to benefit from the more rapid uptake of technology diffusion. So I think the evidence suggests that if you have stronger IP rights, you get new technologies more quickly. So I don't think it's really fair to say that developing countries should not protect intellectual property in order to gain access to new technologies more rapidly. There might be an argument for that in the very most poor countries, where companies are less likely to invest in launching new technologies. But in a country like Malaysia, which is fairly rich on the global scale, there's money to be made here. So people want to bring new technologies here and people are prepared to pay for them. So I think intellectual property is a very important part to Malaysia's development and getting access to new technologies rapidly.
So in Southeast Asia, which fields or industries have the potential to benefit most from IP laws?
Well, Malaysia has potential within the creative industries, has a growing film industry. It does a lot of digital work. There's big potential in biotech. There's lots going on in the life science sector at various levels of the R&D value chain. The sky's the limit, really. And there's lots of industries that are very much in their infancy, artificial intelligence. Because what's changed over the last 20 to 30 years, you don't necessarily need massive manufacturing capacity and big factories to get involved in making products. New technologies allowed things to be developed much more cheaply. So for countries like Malaysia, you have that advantage that you don't have to have these big expensive investments in R&D and capital like in the old days. You can dip in and out to things that you're specialized in. But again, intellectual property rights will underpin the ability of local entrepreneurs to trade and to share with other big companies that might want to license and develop their product. Say, for example, you developed a new technology for knee replacements and you're a small Malaysian company. You're not going to have the ability necessarily to manufacture and market it around the world. But what you can do is you can license out your technology to companies, potentially foreign companies, that have the ability to do that. Therein, your innovation can go global. But unless you have a patent protection, you can't make that relationship with the people who might want to commercialize your product. So that's how the Silicon Valley model works, wherein people come up with a great idea and then they license it out to a bigger company. And that's something the Malaysian smaller companies should be looking to do as well and are doing. But again, intellectual property is kind of the background software that enables these relationships to be made and enables these deals to be done and taking new products to the market in that way.
So through the report, what were some of the findings about the state of IP frameworks among Southeast Asian countries? And also, what are some things to address in order to move forward?
Sure. Well, all members of ASEAN are also members of the World Trade Organization, which has what's called the TRIPS Agreement, which is the global treaty which governs intellectual property rights. And the rules in there have to be adopted in your national legislation. And that provides a basic framework of IP rights. So it provides patents for 20 years. It provides certain copyright provisions to protect film and the creative industries. And it provides certain trademark provisions which protect brands. So all countries signed up to this in the mid-1990s. But things have moved on a bit since that was negotiated. The internet didn't exist then. So the WTO treaty on IP is very much a basic standard, and it doesn't necessarily take account of modern technologies and protection. So the IP framework and IP law should constantly be evolving to take advantage or to take account of new technologies. And that's sometimes where ASEAN countries fall behind a bit. They haven't necessarily kept up with the rapid changes in technology, whereas some Western countries are, you know, the originators of these technologies have evolved their own frameworks much more rapidly. But it is generally a positive picture overall. I mean, compared to neighbours, Malaysia does very well. According to various international indexes that benchmark the quality of IP regimes, Malaysia does better than the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam and Indonesia. It's behind Singapore, but Singapore has been a knowledge-based economy for some time and has a very big incentive to have the highest global standards of IP. So yeah, I think it's a positive picture. But where Malaysia does fall down with is enforcement, particularly on the copyright side. So you see lots of pirated online videos and software around the place, lots of that going on. You see some counterfeit products in the market, some counterfeit brands. So enforcing the rules around preventing those is difficult, although the government has taken steps, particularly on the copyright side recently, to clamp down on piracy.
And with the ongoing trade war between China and the US, how might strengthening IP frameworks benefit Malaysia?
So with the trade war that's going on between China and the United States has imposed lots of tariffs on Chinese exports. And in practice, that means that globalized supply chains, which I was talking about earlier, the parts that are based in China are suddenly becoming much more expensive. So companies with global supply chains are looking at relocating or pulling out some of their manufacturing capacity, some of the work they do in China, out of China to other countries that are not affected by these tariffs. So if we're talking about knowledge-intensive manufacturing in the information technology space, for example, or in pharmaceuticals being another example, countries with a stronger intellectual property rights regime are going to do better in attracting some of that dislocated activity. Now, Vietnam's been doing very well here in the last 10 years, particularly. It's been really upgrading many of its rules and regulations, not just in IP, but labor market, tax regulation, and it's been attracting a lot of this dislocated activity from China. Vietnam's now running up against capacity problems. It only has a limited amount of factory space, and it doesn't necessarily have enough skilled people around to take up all this work. So there's a huge opportunity for countries in this region, Malaysia being one, to take up some of the work that's being lost from China. So again, there's an incentive for the government to ensure that the IP system is hospitable to that investment.
Philip, thank you so much for those insights. That was Philip Stevens, Executive Director of Geneva Network, a public policy research and advocacy organization that is highlighting the need for more IP protection within the region. If you have any thoughts you'd like to share, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.